Well, here we are with you, our friends, to bring you the tea. We're here at the City of Tea, and I'm Shannon.
And I'm Gabe.
And PJ.
I'm eating a banana and
In April?
you know what's great about eating a banana in April is that it came from my CSA box, which it's like community supported agriculture. I'm pretty sure they got these bananas from fucking Safeway.
Who in turn got them from Argentina.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not, it's like
Community.
you are supporting a
Right.
community, not this one, though.
It's true.
A community of investors somewhere who bought a
Yeah, that's
farm.
right. Well, okay. So we were going to talk, we were going to like start by just being like, so how's it going? How was your week or whatever? But fuck that. Because two of the three of us had a time. Okay. I know your listeners are at the edge of your fucking seats. So what happened was there was this idea to book a
You
fancy
can call it a
house,
dream. You can call
a
it a
dream. It
dream.
was a dream. There was this dream to book a fancy house and have a bunch of friends just have a leisurely weekend, luxuriating in a hot tub, drinking a lot of alcohol, eating a lot of snacks. Just, having a nice time in a space that we would not otherwise find ourselves in. So where does
Very
one
true.
turn to? Airbnb, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
So clicking on air, I forget that I'm not being recorded on YouTube, so I don't have to gesture as wildly as I normally do. I gesture frequently anyway. Okay, so go on Airbnb. Find this house. Looks dope. It's got a view, beautiful rooms, lots of space for socializing, plenty of space for people who need their alone time. Booked.
Has a
Really
hot
expensive.
tub.
It has a hot tub.
The views are gorgeous. Oh my God.
Gorgina, the views are. So one day before the trip, I receive a call from the host. The host says, she says to me, there's some plumbing issues in the house. They're not, the house just isn't going to be available this time around. But I have this other house. It's better. The only difference is it has a heated pool instead of a hot tub. So disappointed, sure. I say, girl, send me that link and I'm going to send it to the homies and we're all going to talk and figure out if we want to do this. Never was there like, look at this, and then maybe like, and if you don't want it, you can just have a full refund. It was like, this, you are going to love this house.
It's more expensive. You're getting a
Yeah.
deal.
Oh,
You're
yeah.
getting a deal. And did I mention that there's a heated pool? So I think, we're all in this space where like, we had all been looking forward to the weekend. It was a long weekend. We had been looking forward to hanging out together. This particular group of people had not been in the same space, like hanging out in a rental house since the fall before. And honestly, looking back on it, we probably all just should have gone back to Mexico. But whatever.
Definitely.
Hindsight is 2020. So everyone's like, yeah, totally, let's go to this house. So I am at the grocery store purchasing the day of the trip. I'm at the grocery store purchasing all of the items for everyone to eat. It's like 10 people. It's a lot of food. And I'm pretty strong, but pushing that cart around was whew. Plus, like, I have to have my own alcohol. It's like a BYOB situation. So, y'all know the cart was full. I get a fucking phone call from the host, and she
Part
says to
two.
me, oh, she says to me, so the previous guest broke a door in one of the bedrooms, so you're not going to be able to use one of the bedrooms. And I'm like, okay, well, this is like a thing. We are all adults. We are all over 40 or near 40. Not we are not all. There are people who are not there. Whatever. We want our own spaces. So I'm like, oh, like, shit, this is a thing. And she's like, I will order you a portable mattress. I
It
don't
just
know
keeps
what.
getting better.
Yes.
I don't know what a portable mattress is, but I'm thinking what I was not thinking was that she was going to order from Target.com a delivery person to drop off an air mattress and a set of microfiber sheets. But that is what she did.
Exactly.
Which was left on the outside.
On the front door.
On the front door, which you could not use. It was inaccessible, locked off by a piece of wood. So I'm like, all right, cool. We're going to make it work. Then someone drops out of the trip. So it doesn't even matter anyway, because they had their own situation. Then I get to the house and it is not
as advertised.
It is not a house for the level of luxuriating that we were looking for. I don't even know where to begin with the shit.
Okay, I'll help. I'll jump in, because when I walked up, one of our other friends walked out and was like, "This place is kind of a dump." And I laughed and I was like, "Oh, there's like, he's joking. There's no way. There's like, this place looks incredible, like from the outside, the neighborhood, how much money we spent on it." And I walk in, and at first you're kind of like, you're just taking things in. You're not really like paying attention to like the little nitty gritty. But the first thing that I see is that the couches are covered, which is fine. Like, they can be covered, but they're like covered with a fitted sheet for like a bed. And the table has like a plastic coating cover over it. Like
your grandma's tablecloth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or if you were going on like an outside picnic and wanted to put a fucking plastic cover down. So that was the first thing. And so I asked Shannon if she's taken a look at the pool yet. And when the host said heated pool, the word heated in that situation was doing a tremendous amount of heavy lifting.
So much. It's
a solar heated pool, which means that it has solar mats on the roof in the Bay Area, which sees
right notoriously hot.
Maybe like, yeah, three hours out of the entire year, which means that the pool wasn't heated at all. Like, it's ice cold. So like, we're just kind of commiserating on the pool thing, and there's a pool house in the back. And the pool house in the back apparently had someone living in it that we were not informed of ahead of time. So when one of our friends decided to kind of take a peek around and go check out the pool house and open the door to find an angry older man with his dog, we were a little shocked. And we're like, "Whoa, what the fuck is this? Like, why is there a person living on this property that we weren't told about?"
We get extra charge for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then things just started like snowballing wildly out of control. Like, it became like part of the mystery of the weekend to find like as many things wrong with the house that we could. Like, there were shower racks, towel racks that were falling off the wall. There were light receptacles that didn't have light bulbs in them, with the receptacles like literally hanging out. There were like wires exposed, the cabinet doors were falling off the hinges. There were no towels in any of the bathrooms, which is what you might assume if you're, renting out an Airbnb, that they would
also
give
no
you towels.
No soap.
No sponges in the kitchen. But they did have a wild collection of hot sauces, so do give them that. But as
thank God. Really like,
bring your own sink.
Yeah, right. As we're exploring throughout the weekend, I think that the biggest, at least to me, the biggest wild ass fuckery of this whole thing was that we started like opening up the closets, and we found like boxes and boxes of like protein supplement food packages. And we were like, what the fuck is this? And as we're kind of looking through one of the closets, we find a brochure for the house.
Oh God.
Because it was a senior living facility as of like 3 weeks ago.
Oh my God.
So this explains, like, once that is uncovered, it explains why there are alarms on the outsides of the bedroom doors. It also explains why there is a massive wheelchair ramp leading up to the doors on the, like, the doors on, for so there, for every bedroom, there are the doors from inside the house, but then there are doors that you can take to go outside of the house.
Yeah.
So, like, the ADA rooms have a wheelchair ramp so that you can wheel yourself into your room. Yeah, it clearly explains, like, the protein shakes and that the living room had, like, this skylight, a massive skylight. So this living room was like a rec room. It also explains the plastic table covering. All of a sudden, things start making a little bit more sense. And I mean, making sense is generous. Yeah. Because there's still a lot of mystery as to why this house is on Airbnb, listed as a 5-star experience with like 6 or 7 5-star reviews and like pretty nice photographs. And I know like Photoshop exists. I have been renting houses on Airbnb for 10 years. I have never experienced something this wild. Like the way that a group of 9 people couldn't find switches to like turn off ceiling fans, turn on the various fireplaces. Turn on lights, like light. There were lights that just straight up didn't work. We literally ate dinner by candlelight, not because we were being romantic. It was because we could not see our food.
And we found a folder filled with the medical documents of their previous elderly residents. With their names, their conditions, their doctor's notes,
their like, blood pressure, their diabetes.
It was insane. I like huge HIPAA violation.
Oh
just
my
like
gosh.
Sitting out, like they didn't even, and then they just clearly had like pushed things into closets where they were like, oh, we need to move this and get ready for like this becoming an Airbnb. So let's just throw a bunch of like dirty towels. And like old bedding and like old vacuum cleaners. And we'll leave like a baby high chair out for
and
some reason.
Multiple vacuums.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it and old yearbooks like it, from the person who owns the house, like his
Eric.
1980 Eric Ruiz. We see you.
We saw all your stuff, brother.
And it was honestly just like at a certain point. I did fear that we were going to be attacked by elderly ghosts and
right.
We also like being attacked by elderly ghosts was like a very real possibility, but also being attacked by humans was a possibility because none of the doors locked. Mm-hmm. Also, the way that you locked the door, the front door was incredible. There's an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that was printed clearly on an inkjet printer that says like antique doors, like cannot lock from the inside, use the stick to the right. And it was like a metal, like a foot long piece of metal that you just stuck on the door and that's it. And you're safe.
I thought that we were like trying to prevent a Balrog like coming from a dungeon. Oh, like we were like, right. All right, men, like put the metal bar in the hook and like we're going to secure the castle. It ridiculous.
It was incredible. And so Airbnb, as you might imagine, they have been just incredible. And we got 100% refund and they were just like, yeah, oh my gosh, that sounds terrible. Psych. It is equally as surprising, exhausting, and mysterious what the next message from Airbnb might be. The host, so I contacted the host and was like, yo, there's a lot of issues with this house. Like, this is not, I didn't pay for this. Like, we didn't pay for this. And the host says, just before 10 o'clock p.m., if you all leave tonight. Don't stay tonight. Leave right now. Then you can have a full refund. Like, in what world does a house, like a house, a 6-bedroom house that is just full of humans, do we all just like leave? And it's not as if we waited until 9 p.m. to complain. The complaints began very quickly after arrival. There was, you know, a community authoring of a letter. So it's, yeah. So like, fuck Airbnb, fuck Airbnb all the way. Like,
and they said, you know, people online were like, you got to make sure that you book with super hosts only. And this person was a super host. And like, clearly doesn't matter.
No. So there's like no, every message that I got that I have received from Airbnb is like, rest assured, we are here to take care of you. I just got off the phone with Airbnb like an hour ago or less. And the support ambassador was like, so can you tell me why you chose to stay at the house when you were offered a full refund? And it is at that point that I was like, wait, you're not reading a fucking thing that has been sent to you. And also, you are a monster.
So you were cool with us just like camping out front inside of our cars because that's the only option we had.
Oh,
like,
also, they told us that there was a garage, which was cool because multiple people had thousands of dollars worth of band equipment in their cars. So we were going to be able to like have a secure place for people to park their cars. But when I pulled up and found that it was a carport, which could be accessed by manually opening the gate with
not a garage.
I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to fucking park my truck in there. Like, there is no safety and security here.
So from here on out, our listeners, I'm going to recommend that you stick with the tried and true Motel 6s.
Absolutely.
Never a disappointment.
What I know to be true is that last week at the Sacramento City Council on Tuesday, also an incredible time was had when many terrible human being, like fascists and chuds and assholes and all of them, they all just came out and decided to show Sacramento who they really are and protest a resolution that was introduced before the council to make Sacramento, like, why can't I speak? To make Sacramento a sanctuary city, effectively meaning that this Sacramento is a safe place for folks to seek gender affirming care. And I don't know, I was like thinking about this before we hit record, and I was like, it would be super cool if we had like somebody, like a guest to come on the show who could like, you know, who maybe like helped author the resolution and help like work, you know, super closely to get this shit done.
We don't know anyone like that.
But I guess we're just gonna have to settle for JP. tell us about it, yes. TJ.
Your alter ego.
Right. Oh my gosh. So few people are gonna get that.
But yeah, inside jokes are great.
Well, so basically, and Katie said as much from the dais, she said that there is a sanctuary state resolution on file for the state, but it primarily is geared towards kids whose parents are being prosecuted and gone after for seeking gender affirming care so their kids don't kill themselves. And this kind of goes above and beyond that because it also affects adults, because one of the things that we've been seeing is that not only did they came for the kids and now they're transitioning over, ironically enough, to going after the adults because they don't want anyone to have any sort of access to hormones or other gender affirming care that might be paid for by private insurance companies. So it's really no matter of theirs. Yeah. So to that, we had, I think it was probably around 30 or 40 commenters that night in favor of it. And then we had about 5, maybe 6, 3 chuds and like 3 Moms for Liberty One of whom was from Davis, the other two are from Placer County. So
what the fuck does it matter to you people?
So enjoyable when they come to our fair city, especially when we go to their city, or when people, not even people from our city, go to their city to complain. If they're actual people from their city and they still claim that those people from out of the county. So it's like, so you can do that thing, but you're not okay with other people doing that. Okay. All right. Sure.
Yeah. It's, I mean, so the good news is that I think surprisingly, actually, that passed unanimously at the council. I was super surprised about that. I was not surprised about the like absolute shit show that became of Twitter, that became of like the, I mean, I wasn't there, but I saw on socials some of the filming from folks. You know, just like the assholes that showed up. The big thing, like this sanctuary city conversation caused a wild narrative switch with the right, which is, it's not new. It's not unique. We've all fucking heard it. But this whole, so Sacramento is okay with child mutilation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, some of this is like, there's also this, I don't know if it's today being the third or tomorrow. It's at some point this week, Sac State is having this guest speaker.
Yesterday.
It was yesterday. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Oh, of course. Yesterday.
Yeah.
Part of the whole detransition gang of.
No, folks. She wasn't a detransitioner. She was the swimmer who came in 14th place. Mm-hmm. Behind a trans person.
Oh, right, who right.
Didn't even
right.
get first place, but then right. she somehow claimed that trans person took her spot that she would have rightfully had at mediocre swimming.
I want 13th.
Basically, that's what would have happened. Like, whoa, give me 13th. There's, give me that scholarship money. 13th, you know, get it.
If you're not 13th, you're basically last. So,
I mean, that's what I've heard. I don't know. I've seen so much. There was. I mean, I tweeted something about Katie, who I'm sure anyone listening to the show has already heard the devastating news that Philip Plucky Bum.
Pluckenbaum? Pluckenbaum?
Pluckenbaum?
Pluck his pubes. Has by a very thin margin, taken the D4 seat. So he's unseated the incumbent Katie Valenzuela, who has done an incredible amount of work for that district, not only for the district, but for the city. And she has certainly pulled the dais more left than it has been in some time. She's done an incredible amount of work, and she did not lose that seat for lack of trying. I think she lost it because Phil was willing to pay canvassers and
27 bucks an hour.
Yeah. So I had tweeted something about her unfortunately losing the seat. And in the replies, there were a couple people who were like, oh, is she the one that's okay with child mutilation? I honestly, like, I can't even find the words to say how, like, fucked up and twisted. Like, the right is beyond. They can go hang out with Airbnb.
Especially since there was, and I was trying to find the article and I can't, so I apologize, but it was like 2 weeks ago that one of the Placer County residents who was at the Capitol on January 6th just got caught with a bunch of child porn.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Like these are the people that always come out and accuse anyone, you know, to the left of fucking Mussolini, that they're in support of, you know, child mutilation, child abuse, etc. When it's like, these are always the fucking people that get caught molesting a 14-year-old, getting caught with child porn. It's like they are, and on top of that, they're also the ones that largely dominate in areas that are very right wing. They openly advocate for like child marriage, They like will openly advocate for like the elimination of consent laws. They'll openly advocate on behalf of like, you know, a child who was literally assaulted by someone and gets pregnant and is seeking an abortion. And they're like, oh no, fuck that. Like, you got to have that kid. Like, these people are, they epitomize like propelling child abuse and trying to normalize it.
Yeah. And I think, that is like in a lot of ways, like that is the genesis of these arguments, right? It's like to distract from the actual like emotional, mental and physical abuse that is perpetuated in these communities and to like try to shine the spotlight on something else. And just like, and they do that in such a way that is like disseminating like harmful and misinformation, but it's just like, it's just sticky enough that they can grab more people and bring them into their like fold of just complete fuck faces.
And as long as they're ignorant of the actual facts surrounding it, then none of it's going to get through their preconceived narratives of gay people largely being bad. And so and the predisposition to believe that in spite of all their pastors and uncles coming out as molesters, that it's still the gay person on the street rather than the person in their own home or in their own friend group.
Right. Yeah. And that their perception of society is that there would be no gay, lesbian, bisexual, pan, trans, anyone who fits within like the LGBTQ plus community if they weren't targeted as children, which is like so ridiculous. It's like, are you kidding me?
Bonkers.
Like it's like, oh, I mean, well, there's more people who are identifying, you know, in ways that are not cis or hetero. So the only possible explanation,
there's only one reason.
Yeah, is because, you know, the liberal neo-Marxist Hollywood elites have turned all their children against them. God, I mean,
Go ahead.
They just want to live in peace and marry 13-year-old girls and get them
right.
pregnant. I mean, like, what? Like, tradition, y'all.
Yeah.
Stick to tradition.
Right. And also sexually assault people and force them to have babies. And it's like just an incredibly life-giving situation over there.
Yeah. They believe all the best things about people and their intrinsic notions of how they interact with other people. Just the best things.
There was a lot of, you know, I was checking a lot of the coverage of this kind of across the state and on even like national news sources, and overwhelmingly they were all pretty positive, but then of course the comment sections so like when everything breaks down. But I thought it was really interesting because there's this author, Bryn Tannehill, who wrote a book called American Fascism, in which she kind of like outlines where we are headed as a nation and the prediction that we are going to see more and more of this, like very specific areas in the country that have been deemed like safe for anyone who is not essentially like a Christian fascist, and how that will become more and more frequent, but more and more dangerous for cities to do. And like, I think that we're just kind of becoming, you know, especially after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, you started seeing this like, okay, well, we're going to protect people who are seeking abortion services, and we're going to make sure that like if they cross state lines, like they're going to be protected. And then like, you know, other states have ramped up their ability to attempt to, you know, essentially like enact Interpol laws, but within the country, and prosecute them, jail them. You know, in certain cases, even advocating for like the death penalty for people who do that. And it's just like this is just the beginning of this kind of wild shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that as long as we live in a space where there are people, I was going to say anti-fascist, but like the truth is that you don't even need anti-fascists to create safe spaces, right? Like you have people who aren't like that. Aren't there, but they are folks who are are genuinely invested in like the basic care and flourishing of the LGBTQ community. Like, as long as we have those people in the world trying to make things better, you're going to have fascists who come out and try to just slap it all down with their bullshit. Like, and I think it's a, like, it's an important thing that we have to acknowledge and that we have to prepare for as, like, as allies, and that, like, we got to be ready to stand up and fight that bullshit. Like, in the same way that we would many other causes. We had, just speaking of safe spaces, just on March 29th, there's an opinion piece by Casey Tinnen, who's a pastor at Loomis Basin Congregational Church. This pastor who recognized through his involvement with the church that it was a really, the church tends to be a really toxic place for queer folks. And Pastor Casey, just before arriving to serve at a church in Auburn, learned that a queer member of the congregation's youth group had taken her own life. And this person identified as queer, and she was bullied, and as the op-ed states, she had no language for how to reconcile her religious upbringing and her sexual orientation, which is all too fucking common, right? That you have like that level of not only bullying but death by suicide among the queer community. And then, you know, Pastor Casey was like, I just want to create a safe space within the church, not only for queer youth, but for their adult caregivers, where we can begin to talk safely about what it means to be who we are in the church that has largely not accepted them. And the real like root of that was that creating this program called The Landing Spot, this support group, was to Pastor Casey like a life-saving measure for queer young people in the church. This is in Placer County.
Well, then Placer School District and Placer High School District also concluded that it's a life-saving organization, because it just makes sense. And I will say, I appreciate the fact that he did this as a gay pastor. But one of the things that I like is that he kind of moved out from the umbrella of the church, because that's one of the biggest things that I've seen so much is like a lot of people have trauma surrounding religion, especially gay folks. And you have to like, it's, while it can be an accepting space and a familiar space, it could also be a triggering space. Mm-hmm. So the last thing you want to do is kind of force people into that space when they may not be at a good place to be able to do that. So I kind of like that they were able to do that, because despite all of them say that they're all being groomed this way, in reality, they exist. They're going to exist no matter what. And if you pretend like they're not going to exist, then that's when the suicides happen. So it's like, you can't just ignore this out of existence. Either you're going to have safe spaces where they're going to be able to go, or you're going to have more dead kids. Those are the two options.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's obviously very clear which one they will choose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean
when they want teenagers and preteens to have kids that because they got molested, then clearly their concern isn't for the children.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, story about like the landing spot and Pastor Casey kind of blew up around this time last year, because he was also targeted by Project Veritas, and they put out, you know, one of those stupid fucking sting videos. And it was really because they were putting on an event at Roseville High School, and that had kind of garnered the attention of Matthew Oliver, who's like the fucking Fuhrer of Destiny Church, which is a super right-wing, politically active church in Placer County. That, you know, he is a political figure who proselytizes from the pulpit to encourage his congregants to get involved, you know, in right-wing movements. Has even so recently had been trying to pull people into what he's calling like essentially vigilante groups, right? Like, this dude is a fucking lunatic. And they, of course, targeted the pastor for a number of reasons, but what they were using as their shield was that, you know, he's bringing this into schools, God forbid, right? That he tries to help queer youth in Placer County find a place that they can meet other folks, you know, have adults that they could look up to, find guidance from. And yeah, this it's, you know, and of course, then that turned into people not only threatening him, his partner, other churchgoers, but like the kids themselves, right? It always ends up into that, in that situation. You know, you had a situation last year where a bunch of protesters showed up in front of the school district to demand that the landing spot be closed down. You had widely known full Nazi Jeffrey Perrine, who was out there yelling about how these kids are unsafe, literally while he left his two children in a car several blocks away, not being watched, like small kids, right? While complaining about how kids were unsafe, you know. And what I really appreciate about Pastor Casey is that his emphasis is on, he's like, really finding the silver lining in this situation. Like you said, PJ, that like he was able to break away the landing spot actually because of this from the church and make it its own 501c3. So it's completely unaffiliated now at this point, was able to garner a tremendous amount of support from the community who wanted to make sure that this service continued to exist. And even though it's no longer, you know, being offered in the Placer County schools because they capitulated, you know, they still had to recognize that this was a life-saving service. And because of that, the community showed up and they showed the fuck up for that. And they showed up for the kids and made sure that this was still going to be available. And just because, you know, it results in the ugliest fucking facets of our world rearing their heads. Like, you can't, you're not going to win. You're not going to win. Like, we're not going to let you fucking win.
Yeah. And I think that's like, I think there are so many times when like the devastation of the place that we find ourselves in terms of like social support and you know, fucking how things are going politically and all the things like that can be really overwhelming. And I think it can really get a person down.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a lot to be said, and it is a helpful reminder in like the most hopeless moments that they are not gonna win, like that there's a lot of ugliness that's disintegrating because there are people who are willing to get out there and fight and make sure that the fascists don't win, like, because they can't.
Yeah, and we keep building up these community spaces, and that's really the key to it all, is ensuring that we have like robust community spaces. And that's one of the things that we have with so many local orgs. And like even yesterday, like largely a lot of people that I've talked to in anti-fascist spaces were kind of like, weren't sure how CSUS was going to go, because CSUS doesn't seem like it's typically politically active in that manner. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, like we showed up and there were like 50 or 60 people there. So it was a really good showing. And it's like, see, there's all these pockets, and it's just a matter of like connecting them all, so we all have each other's backs when these type of things pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, CSU, I went to Sac State for grad school, and it was interesting whenever you had folks from like TPUSA or like the Young Republicans, when they were getting real, real vocal about it. You know, what SQE, like Students for Equality Education, is one of the groups that is like actively shutting that shit down. You know, and I heard there a lot of great things about their ability to organize yesterday. I heard that it like turned into an impromptu punk show, which I fucking love.
Which was awesome. It was so awesome.
Amazing. Amazing. You know, and that to me is like, there was a lot of, you know, kind of post-analysis of the uprisings in 2020, where you saw a lot of the youth leadership, especially in Sacramento, you know, in hindsight, get ridiculed for the lack of like leadership and maybe the lack of experience in being weary, apprehensive about forming forms of leadership within the movement at that time. And I don't necessarily think this is the space to get into that analysis, but I do think that it's really important to, like, sometimes, especially in when it's spaces that are dominated by young folks, like, to let them take that lead, right? And to let them show us, like, what it is that they're willing to do to make sure that our joint communities are safe. And that's so critically important. And it's like, of course, they're going to make mistakes. You never know how it's going to go, but, like, that's okay. Like, we're going to make mistakes. And we're trying to build a better world.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, can I tell you the number of times where I've gone back to people's budget community agreements and they just, so many of them hit so hard when it comes to these sorts of things where it's like, assume good intentions, or, you know, take space, make space. And it's one of those things where it's like, especially in this kind of situation, we have more experienced people. The nice thing about, like, assuming good intentions is letting people have the chance to make those mistakes, but then also giving them the space to be able to do what they feel is right. And then, if necessary, offering the advice, this is what we've done, but letting them get there most of the way themselves. So that way they are bought into the process rather than feeling like they're being, like, domineered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, a couple cool things in Sacramento.
I mean, that was, like, weirdly positive for us.
That was weirdly positive. Right. That's true. It's weirdly positive for us in our very, in our youthful podcast history, but also it's pretty positive for us as like three independent,
bitter 40 somethings.
Bitter 40 somethings. Exactly. Yeah. We're just like, you know what? It's all right. Like, things are going, the kids are all right, man. Like,
yeah.
Honestly, the kids are going to save us all.
Yep.
Oh, okay. So as a side note to that, because during our weekend getaway, my band played on Saturday at a show at the Phoenix Theater in Petaluma. And, like, we were playing, like, with a band that was, like, straight out of high school. And we were in the green room with, like, a bunch of kids. Like, they were, like, kids. And I have never in my life felt so old. Like, I've been in, obviously, like, I used to be a teacher, but it's a very different dynamic, right? Yeah, like, I was their teacher. This is, like, a space where we're all just, like, hanging out, being, like, rock and roll people, you know. I, like, was listening to their conversations, and there were some skateboard ramps in the place, and one of them said to the singer of our band, he was like, oh, you know, you can just grab one of those skateboards and, like, take it on the ramp. And he was like, no, man, I'm 40.
Yeah. Bodies work a little bit different the older right. we get. That show, you know, like, we're talking about safe spaces and, like, watching all those little punks be little punks was... Mm. There, man, that was dope. There were these two little shits running around, like, just having a time, like, beating the shit out of each other while the bands played, and
jumping off the stage.
All I could think was, like, man, I hope these kids are 40 someday and, like, remember this moment while they're standing at a show watching, you know, another group of little shits beat the shit out of each other and jump off the stage. Like, it is very cool to see. Just to see spaces where that's okay. Like,
yeah.
You know, where little shits can be little shits. It was great.
I don't have a good segue from that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, right. I had one, and then we got off topic, and One of the things that happens when things don't go the way we want it to is homelessness.
There it is. Great segue.
Flawless.
So here's what's going to happen is, like, we have, like, a majority, a positive-ish show, but we cannot leave you on that note because we have to talk about homelessness in Sacramento. So we're just going to bring it down a couple notches and get real. So this week, meaning yesterday, April 2nd, the Sacramento City Council item 14 on the agenda was the city auditor's preliminary report on the city's homelessness response, and probably another 24 words after that. It was a long agenda item where the city auditor, yeah, presented a report. And thankfully, at the very end of her report, Daryl says, okay, wait, so what did you need from us? And she's like, well, we received direction to do two audits. One is to review citywide strategy with a focus on challenges like the motel shelter program. And the second is to audit the homeless contracts and the contract process. So we just need you to say green light or no. And he's like, oh, okay. So Daryl knew exactly what was going on the entire time she was talking, which is very exciting. I think honestly, what we saw from Daryl was a little bit of the senioritis.
He's He's already on his
way out.
Yeah. But yeah, he mentioned several times, like, this is going to be a real good thing for the next council, next mayor.
Next council.
Because I am not doing it anymore.
Because I am done, basically. Essentially, like, the auditor conducted some independent research and began to evaluate costs and effectiveness of the homeless response, which is interesting to me as a homeless service provider, because the response is not a lot. So what I suspect is that independent research didn't take much time. But they did, the auditor and the team did determine that all of that charge was too wide ranging, and they need more information. So they came up with four topics, seven objectives: strategy, coordination, cost, data integrity, the usefulness of data, and more. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we could really like jump into it and talk about some shit. But the thing that I want to start with is the city auditor took a little peek at homeless expenditures by department for fiscal year 22-23. Community response, the Department of Community Response, which, comes in at the highest amount spent.
That didn't make sense to me, because isn't their budget like really small? I thought it was like 10 million.
Yeah.
Are they just lumping in police and other crap underneath that?
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. Has to be. They spent 56.9% of the budget, but that's not even the thing. Whatever. Let's skip to number two. Number two is the fucking city manager.
$7.8 million.
Mm-hmm. What? 13.73%.
Is Howard's entire salary coming out of the homeless services? Like, what the fuck?
Like,
I would not.
Truly, though. And then I don't know if anyone might be able to determine what number three is without a hint.
Please.
The hint.
Please. And there's no way that it's that low. 4.5 million? Come on.
There's no
joking.
Way.
Every time that any sweeps folks are out there, there are multiple officers earning hundreds of thousands of dollars each for hours on end. Like, no.
Just a little drop. Just a little drop for them.
Drop in the bucket.
Only 4%.
One of the things that I really liked about it, I will say, that at a certain point, they go through and they break down some of the different expenses in there. And one of the things is that they break down the per person costs at places like Miller Park, mm-hmm. and the per person costs at places like Camp Resolution.
So
the Miller Park being... Miller Park being the temporary safe ground where people could camp, and the city provided tents. It was gated off for the nearby residents' protections. They had hose water, it cost them $81 per day per person. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Camp Resolution which was an autonomous action to take over a space that was promised to people. And they still haven't been provided any formal electricity or water services, or I don't even know if they've been provided bathrooms by the city. I know they temporarily had some as like a donation type thing. Yeah. $11 today. Mm-hmm. This is what we're saying. When we're saying all this freaking bureaucracy is expensive, why are we doing it? If for the price of a Miller Park, you could get 8 camp resolutions. And even if you like tack on extra costs, like things like, you know, putting in electricity and getting water services in there, what are you going to get? So maybe $25, $30? Like you could still do another 2 whole camp resolutions before you get to the cost of a camp, Miller Park. And it's going to be much more efficient in the fact that you're going to have people out there who are actually invested in the process and aren't like sitting on asphalt in the hot sun inside tents with, you know, hose water.
Yeah.
One of the things that is, so I did not watch the meeting as it was happening on account of being generally angry with all things homeless provision in this city and county. But looking back on it in prep for recording, one of the things that is super frustrating to me, every time there is any sort of presentation on matters under the umbrella of homelessness at the local government level, is that they are so incredibly misleading around the direct assistance and services that are provided to people, to unhoused people in our community. Yep. They use language that makes it, that upholds the facade that there is enough robust services or that there is enough political will to work toward having robust services for unhoused people. When they say things like, and this is a quote from page 9 of the city auditor's report, the city provides direct assistance and services to people experiencing homelessness, which include outreach efforts as well as temporary and emergency shelters. I will shit on this report and mail it back to the office of the city auditor because that's fake, that's false, that it's not mm-hmm. true. Are there outreach efforts at the city level? Sure, but they are minimal. Temporary shelter is like so insufficient. And emergency shelter does not exist in this community. Like, we have to stop saying emergency shelter, because emergency shelter means that there is a bed for every head. When people, and I am a middle schooler, so all I can think of when I say head is a blowjob. And I'm real sorry about it, but I had to put it out there because I got distracted by my own thoughts. But emergency shelter means that I am in a crisis. I am coming to you saying I need a place to sleep. And you then say to me, here is the place for you to sleep. Mm-hmm. That does not exist in this community. And I think we need to stop calling it outreach. We need to stop saying outreach efforts, because it's not as if workers have to go out and reach unhoused
yep.
people.
Yep.
They are mm-hmm. literally lining up attempting to receive services. So it's really frustrating to me. I think language around this language is important, period. Language specifically around this, one of the biggest crisis in our community, is especially important, because what that does, if we start saying things in printed material, like the city provides direct assistance, blah, 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 as well as temporary and emergency shelter, then it leads all those fiscal conservatives and politically conservative people to believe that unhoused people are choosing to mm-hmm. not take shelter right. and they are choosing to stay unhoused. But they're not, because they're not being offered an alternative that is reasonable. There are no, mm-hmm. like the alternative is, do you want to go into the shelter where you can take a grocery bag's worth of personal belongings and you have to leave your pets behind? And also, no, sorry, you can't, you know, your friends can't come with you. And no, also your partner can't come with you. And P.S., you can only smoke one cigarette every hour, 700 feet away from the shelter. Oh, you're disabled. Shit. Sorry. All we have is a top bunk. Like,
right.
Like, I'm not pulling any of that out of my ass. That no. is like actual, these are actual barriers that exist for unhoused people. I've run
and,
out.
And also, speaking about like the way that they utilize language in this report, like how benign that they make sweeps sound.
Oh my
they,
god.
Like, yeah. Like reducing impact to the community, trash cleanup, cleaning sidewalks, removal of vehicles from streets. Like what else?
Right.
Right.
Like, well, and also like a saying that it's trash cleanup, like
Well, and I will forever remember the one time that someone was in the sweeps chat and they were seriously like, one of the people was inside their tents and they overheard, it was either friends of Clean or one of the cops. And they were just like, if it looks like trash, I just throw it away. Because whatever they categorize as trash is trash. It doesn't matter. They don't ask the person. They don't check. Nope. None of that matters.
Yeah.
And the language, like you said, is very important because one of the things that they use is they use people's assumptions of what people mean. To assert, like, kind of just insinuate that that's what we're doing when, like, we know that the bus pass and the ID voucher are most of the services they offer. Like, when DCR shows up, they're not showing up, you know, if you're lucky, they show up multiple times for the previous days. Sometimes it's been just one time. And a lot of times when they're trying to make contact with people, it's tap, tap, anyone there, no one's there, move on to the next tent. They never make sure they actually make contact. They never actually make sure they're... And a lot of times when they've had those sorts of situations where you've had like Black Zebra out there actually talking to the DCR and asking them what services you're providing, they're like, we don't have any services. Yep. And it's just like, okay, then... What is this allusion and this hand waving to, we're going to offer them services, but then like, that's one of the things that's so frustrating is because one of the things I think Katie was asking for was actual documentation of what services were offered to what person and what did they take and what didn't they take? Because then we could actually have an idea of what sort of things are being turned down, if anything's being turned down, because if you're turning down stuff that doesn't matter, then we can at least document that and provide some sort of data surrounding it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's one of the missing pieces insofar as data collection around homelessness in general, but like provision of direct homeless services is that qualitative data. Like the thing, like you are serving humans, and therefore, in order to design and implement effective programs for humans, there needs to be an element of qualitative data that exists, because as evidenced by the last fucking 20 years of Sacramento political conversation from the dais, the numbers that are being presented as, you know, the most important data they're not doing it right. Like this is 100% a situation where, like, that piece of the audit that I'm super interested in, which is homeless contracts and the contract process, that's going to be real eye-opening. I mean, I hope, because I think what we're going to find out is that it's a very small group of people who have a monopoly on service provision in Sacramento. And they are charging an incredible amount of money to offer bullshit services.
Well, and they even say that in the report.
Yeah. I think we'll find more and more of that, right? And that,
yeah, yeah.
And I think it's one of the things about those service providers is if you follow them on social media, they're constantly asking for donations of blankets and pillows and, you know, the things that are needed to run their program, which the city pays them for. Like,
right.
That is in your contract. Where the fuck is the money going? This, I just can't. It makes me very frustrated. One of the things that also just like raises the flag that Daryl is ready to go is he said, is moving people, moving equals sweeping. Is moving people interrupting a path to
success? I literally wrote this down.
And then he says, we just want to make sure people aren't, we do want to make sure that people aren't camping where they shouldn't be, but we don't want to create issues when we are looking for them to offer the intervention. This Weird. Is the same guy. Same guy who has heard us yell about, like these are quotes that have come from the mouths of advocates. And he's exactly. like, I'm done with this shit. Let me holler right. at the auditor.
Right. You know, all these advocates, they might be onto something here.
he's saying it as like he just had this original thought. He yeah. was like, wait a second. I got a question for you. Have you ever thought about?
Hold on. I was, you know, I was laying in bed last night and I says to myself, I wonder.
Well, okay. So that's, if I remember the comic correctly, I sent a comic to Katie not long after because she was complaining about Daryl doing the same thing to some of her ideas. And it was the comic of the person walking up to another person with like a light bulb and was like, this is my idea, and hands it to the other person. The other person grabs it. And then like two frames away, the person's like, this is my idea. And it's just like, right. No, it wasn't though, was it?
I mean, but now that he's thinking about it, he has the ability to do something about it for, you know, the next
right.
5 months.
Like, right.
Shouldn't possibly be bothered.
Well, now he can use that as an excuse. Well, I don't have time. I don't have time to take care of this. That's for the next.
I am on my way out. I can't even.
Packs are packs.
God, what else? What else is what are we missing?
Housing.
Yes, we are,
because I mean at the city council meeting 2 weeks ago, you know, obviously the conversations were dominated by a lot of different topics, but they did address the fact, or they were talking about, you know, like, where is this issue with, you know, the amount of housing that we're supposed to be creating within the city that falls within these categories of like extremely low income, middle, low income, et cetera. And then where we actually fall as a city in terms of percentage of housing that we're creating. And it was supposed to be something along the lines of 60 to 70 some percent that falls in the middle to low, but we're at, I think, like, it was like 21%. And that was still within, like, we're only at 13% of the housing that we should be creating. So like 20 some percent of that 13%. And again, you know, that there's a lot of talk about this housing complex that's being built over off of Stockton. Mm-hmm. And I get why they're excited about it. I'm excited about it too. I like the idea of it. It's still not enough. It's not even close to being enough. Like, this does nothing to address the fact of people who are already unhoused. A lot of them don't have any income, right? So like,
right.
You're just addressing the problem of the, like, okay, well, we're trying to prevent people from falling into homelessness, which is great. We need to do that. But like, this doesn't address the problem that we have, you know. And what was their point in time count from this report seemed really low. I mean, it always seems low, but it seemed really low.
So this report, I think, is just the people experiencing homelessness, like,
in the city.
Yes. Or no. This is the one that's like people experiencing homelessness continuously throughout the city.
Oh, chronic.
The other the larger one is like 20,000 across the city that experience homelessness at some point during the year.
Okay.
That's the larger number. Yeah.
I mean, we also know that the point in time count, regardless, is like the methodology is flawed, and it's like it doesn't always capture the accurate number, though. I mean, the latest point in time count hasn't been released, so maybe I'll eat my words and change.
I don't know. I just don't know how they capture housing insecure people. Like, if you're living on a friend's couch, like, how do we capture that? Like,
so that's like the whole point in time count shit. The reason that they do it like one night for the end of January is because the idea is that you're going to be more likely to capture literally homeless folks. But the problem with that is, with that methodology, is that if a person actually is literally or chronically homeless, the likelihood of them being like real hunkered down and, you know, trying, like, they're seeking warmth and shelter. Even if they are sleeping outside, they're not just going to be out for you to see. And like in places where the weather is like real shitty in the winter, that's the idea, right? That like if you're counting people in New York City on January 25th, like that person that you see out there is actually homeless. They don't have anywhere else to go. But in Sacramento, it doesn't actually work as work as designed. I think we've got way more people, because you have to count. You have to, if you have people doubling up in homes and you have people sleeping in their cars and, you know, people like couch surfing on like, you know, a person's like housing choice voucher, that all like, those are also unhoused people. They do not have a home of their own. So that has to be taken into account. But, you know, anything to work around the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the other issues is, I don't know if we've looked, I know that Katie's brought up the vacancy tax, and I think that's been, has that been tabled for the most part?
As far as I remember, yeah.
Okay. Because one of the things that I think it's like, I don't know if there's a way to do it, but there's got to be a way to just take into account the number of like investment, basically would end up being investment properties that have vacancies that just sit vacant because they don't care about filling them, and actually like somehow penalizing the people that are holding those properties, so that way they can't build any new properties, or because it's ridiculous that they can continue to build investment properties, especially like you were saying, the number of above market units that they're creating when we don't need any more for the foreseeable future is just galling, because it's like that's vital land resources that we need to actually build housing for people who actually need it.
Yeah, I really loved that opinion piece that Daryl wrote. I think it was this week about like the, or no, it wasn't, it was, he didn't write it. He was just quoted in it about like the direction that the city is moving in based off of, you know, it being Flo and McCarty going to the runoff in November. And he said, you know, what the city needs to contend with is this like growing tension between the development community and then like just the community at large. Like that's the big crisis here, guys. Like we, you know, we need the developers.
Right.
And we, I guess we all.
Which one's more important? Yeah. Do we really need the community? Like, I think so, maybe.
We really need a thriving downtown.
So I love it here.
Oh, God. I hope everyone's enjoying the windy fucking blowing up cum trees today. So.
Yeah, you know, my allergies have been straight tripping. The cum trees are just like ripping my nose wide open. Also my eye holes. So I've been doing a lot of like scratching of the eyes, which is incredibly cool because earlier this week, my cats decided to run the Daytona 500 across my face. So like on my eyelids are like cat scratches. One of the cats is currently trying to like. Anyway,
I've been waking up to more scratches and it's concerning. I'm just could you guys not while I'm asleep, please?
So I just finished reading a book about a Siberian tiger that, did I already talk about this? A Siberian tiger that was being hunted and one of the hunters wounded it. And so the tiger then like got better and hunted and then killed the hunter.
Nice.
Love it.
And so I think like when I like find myself, when I find like little scratches on myself, I'm like, these motherfuckers are turning into that tiger. They're just like, look at, she's upset. Look at the way she's staring at me, Deborah. They're just like always thinking about murder, these cats. Gotta love them though. All cats are beautiful.
Murder and tuna.
Yeah. Well,
and I feel like that's the tea.
Murder and tuna. I do feel like that is the tea. All right. Well, more tea in 2 weeks.